newspaper because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage.
Or do you do what everybody else in the media does, just create some shit and throw it on the wall and see what sticks, which is what I see happening everywhere.
Where are we at in society today? I'm a man. I'm 40.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
It is Tuesday, October 8th. Thank you for joining us, Menace to Society, the National College Football Show, and more. Really excited about this episode. There was a huge, huge weekend in college football. Some big-time games, and I hope you checked out the Menace to the Midwest show where we detailed Ohio State's big win over Michigan State, the Michigan-Iowa debacle, if you want to call it that. But we really want to look today at the game of the week this past weekend. It was Auburn-Florida. It had to be. So we're going to have some analysis into that shortly on the show. But I want to start with a little current events, a couple things that are in the news and caught my eye that I wanted to talk about and address. And the first thing, which is outrageous, was it's really gained national steam, was a letter that I guess an alumnus of Penn State wrote to one of the players. And it's clearly an old white gentleman. Dave Peterson is his name, and I don't know who he is or what his background is, but he wrote a letter to one of the players and said, basically detailed, my wife and I are proud graduates of Penn State. We follow all Penn State sports. We love it all, blah, blah, blah. And then this paragraph I'm going to read right now is unbelievable that this is even prevalent in society today. He said, though the athletes of today are certainly superior to those in my days, we miss the clean-cut young men and women from those days. Watching the Idaho game on TV, we couldn't help but notice your, well, awful hair. Surely there must be mirrors in the locker room. Don't you have parents or a girlfriend who have told you that shoulder-length dreadlocks look disgusting and are certainly not attractive? I was in awe when I read this because for a litany of reasons, but I think the accountability in today's social media world, we need to find this guy. He needs to answer his actions, because I saw it when I was a coach. Players would get these letters, and even coaches would get letters, sometimes threatening, sometimes racist like that. And there's no place for it in society. There's no place for it in sports, and there's no place for people to sit silent and let it occur, because shorter length dreadlocks can look phenomenally clean and very attractive and very handsome. I've seen it several times. And just like anyone of any race can look sloppy with any hairdo. It's ridiculous. And it needs to be said and talked about, because just moving on is not the option, because it needs to be addressed. And it's wrong. And if you have those feelings, you need to look in the mirror, because you are wrong. That is prejudice. That is racist. And it's not right. So I just wanted to bring it up because it kind of got my hands shaking and my blood boiling. And that's just, there's no place for that in any venue or in any topic. There's no place for it. It's hatred and it's bigotry. It's almost as if he's implying that we need to get back to the Penn State of old, that the Penn State we all loved, you know, the Penn State that covered up for child molestation. And I mean, what are we talking about here? Because the guy had dreadlocks, like, it's embarrassing you as an alumni? Shut up. I mean, that is the most outrageous take I've ever heard. And then he went on to talk about they can't even watch the NFL anymore because of tattoos and end zone antics. And it's like, just those are the fans that are on their way out. And those are not the future of the game. So though you don't want to spend too much energy on it, because it's clearly just a delusional, old, racist human being, but it's just, let's move forward. It's kind of like people that listen to the show and we're like, I could do without the language. It's like, I don't care. You're gonna have to deal with it. That's the reality of the world we live in. So get over it or don't listen. Get over the dreads or don't watch football, and go look in the mirror and sit on your porch and sit in a rocking chair and smoke your pipe. Enough. Get out. but I wanted to address it. The other thing, current events I wanted to look at, because right now, Florida State is in shambles, and I don't know if anyone has paid attention, probably not other than Florida State fans, to the absolute dissension of the staff right now between Kendall Briles and Willie Taggart. And in interviews, it's they're basically throwing each other under the bus constantly. Like Willie, they asked Willie Taggart about a play call. He said, "I don't know. I'm not the offensive coordinator." And then they asked recently after this last game, they asked Kendall Briles. They said, "Well, tell us about the two quarterback system." And he said, "You're gonna have to ask Coach Taggart. He just he puts whoever he wants in, and both are efficient to run the offense." Just complete like hands up. Like don't hold me accountable. Look at that guy. And it's insane. There's obviously no chance for success in this program. Here's the problem that I looked at, and I wanted to talk about kind of coaching contracts and how they work. The problem Florida State has right now is that Willie Taggart has an 85% guaranteed contract, and they gave him, I mean, he has 4 years remaining on a $5 million a year deal. That means to fire him, they would have to write a check for $17 million. And the reality is they're just not going to do that. They're going to bite the bullet and take this for another year or two, probably until, or they're going to try to find a reason to fire him. And that's a dangerous situation to be in when they're looking for a reason to breach contract and find cause and fire you. That is a dangerous place. I mean, he better be on, you know, dotting his I's, crossing his T's. He better be on his game because they will fire him at the mere scent of a cause breaking the contract. And it's really crazy. Now, the other contract that I was floored to find out about, a couple people told me about it. And I don't know if anyone's paid attention to Randy Etzel's contract, but it's really an unheard of contract. And he for example, it is an incentive-based contract almost entirely. I mean, he makes like $1 million a year. It's something extremely low for a big-time head coach. Towards the bottom, I would say, of head coaches' salaries. But his agent built it all as an incentive-based contract. And it's funny because on October 27th, I guess it was last year, UConn lost to UMass 22-17. And it earned Edsel an $8,000 bonus because of these incentives. So he got a bonus for losing to UMass. Just think about that. And so I wanted to look at some of these bizarre incentives. One is if his team scores first in any given game, so if they kick a field goal in the first drive and then lose 61-3, that's a $2,000 bonus for Randy Etzel. If they're leading at halftime, another $2,000 bonus. And then they have a litany of categories where if they are leading, if they beat the opponent in a number of categories, like number of times in the red zone, if they go to the red zone more times than the opponent, even if they never score and get beat by 100, he gets another $2,000 bonus. And the same goes for defense. Let's say points per or tackles for loss. If they have more tackles for loss or sacks than the opponent, that's another $2,000 bonus. And it just made me think, if all of this, all of his contract is incentive based, where does that put his loyalties to winning a game? Because ultimately, if you're trying, I mean, if you get $2,000, if you have more sacks than the other team, you're going to tell your defense corner blitz every play, blitz. I mean, even if it's not the best thing to do, blitz, you're going to blitz because you need to get those sacks. You want those tackles for loss. You want to make that $4,000 on that game. And the outcome becomes secondary to financial gain. And it's bizarre. And then there's all kinds of, he gets $10,000 if they rank in the top six in the AAC for punt coverage or kick return yardage, punt return yardage. And this is just, it's bizarre because it creates this, I don't know, concern that he might make some decisions with financial gain in mind that aren't the best for his team. And it's just crazy. I never heard of anything like it. No one really has. It's one of a kind, the contract he has. And the coordinators actually both have the same contract stipulation. So it's scary when things like that happen, those incentive-based contracts and bizarre things happen because it can become more of a trend. It's like, well, Randy Etzel did it, so I want that. And it's just something to keep an eye on. But coaches' contracts are fascinating. If you ever look at them, how they're structured, how they're worked, the buyouts, all of that. Because I just think back to Kevin Wilson. Kevin Wilson got fired in Indiana basically for free because the contract was so jacked up that they fired him without cause. And he basically didn't get any money out of it. And he was just out. It was like, sorry, your contract sucked. And that's the end of it. But anyways, enough about kind of random topics. Let's talk about the game of the week.
Auburn at Florida.
Oh, yeah, two top teners, huh?
The one thing I will say from the people that I know that were there and just from watching it on TV, the swamp was the swamp.
Yeah, it looked good.
It was rocking.
You love to see it.
I mean, oh God. I mean, you do, though. I mean, ultimately, that was what Florida was when I was there.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
And the sad thing is, and it's going to come back now because Dan Mullen is killing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to come back because when Urban was there, that was just, I mean, we played Citadel one time and it was rocking through the third quarter. And you're like, that's just what the Swamp is. Yeah. And it's like, no, not anymore. Yeah. Will Muschamp snuff that fire out, but man, the Swamp was rocking, and I will. That's my first point. My second point is stop it. Everyone in the country, stop it right now. Stop it. Two reasons. One, Auburn is not a nationally relevant team, and I've said it all year. I said it after they beat Oregon. I'll say it continuously. When they end up with four losses, stop it. Stop trying to inflate this team to make Alabama and LSU look better. Stop it now.
I don't think they will.
Oh, no, they're not going to stop.
They're not going to stop.
No, well, but they should.
It doesn't matter, but people that are listening, 80, 75% of them will be like, thank you, God,
I know.
Jesus. I'm sorry, Jesus Christ is my savior, but Florida had seven turnovers, four fumbles, three interceptions, and they won 19-12. So Auburn is out. Stop trying to keep them relevant for quality wins for other SEC teams. They are out.
Are you gonna?
If you turn the ball over seven times and lose a game, you are an average team, and I'm giving you a gift at calling you average.
So are you going to say the same about Florida when they lose four games?
If they lose four, I don't know how.
They're not going to lose four.
They'll lose three.
Two or three.
They'll lose two, I think.
For sure.
But moral of the story here is Auburn is not even, I mean, they should be ranked like 23 right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Roughly. And
right around where Texas A&M is. I think that's where they should be.
There you go. I said not to bring
above,
it up.
Just sorry, above A&M. Sorry.
I said not to bring it up. 2 of 15 on third and fourth down. Only one trip into the red zone and didn't score. Turned the ball over seven times. Bo Nix was the lowest graded player in the game. He graded out at 29%. 29%. 11 of 27. Six of his completions were behind the line of scrimmage. So any downfield throw, I'm talking anything past the line of scrimmage, he was 5 of 20. 25% completion percentage, I think, if my geometry is correct.
Yeah, right.
I don't know if that's what that is, but yeah.
Here's the problem. People want to make Bo Nix bigger than he is, and I don't want to make him less than he is. Here's what he is. A really, really good story and a really, really good freshman quarterback. Mm-hmm. He's not Trevor Lawrence. He's not that elite freshman. He's just a really good freshman quarterback. He should not be playing at Auburn is the moral of the story.
They should have somebody else.
He should not be starting
for sure.
Yeah, and guess what? He's probably going to be really, really good.
He's probably
going to be a great player.
Yeah. And that's what I think even more so than a good quarterback. All he is he's a talented kid right now. Well, he's not even a good quarterback.
But here's the problem. The storyline is there. The narrative's there. Yeah. He's a legacy. I get it. Mm-hmm. But he threw a 50-50 ball against Oregon. The DB misplayed it. The wide receiver made a great play. And he was immediately vaunted as this, they have Bo Nix. And it's like, time out. And here's my problem. Being real when the national media is absolutely overhyping something... Part of being real is then like trashing a kid. It's like, I'm not trashing Bo Nix. I don't want to. I won't. I think he is doing an absolutely phenomenal job for a freshman that's not the number one pick in the draft.
Well, he's a true freshman playing in the SEC. I mean, he's doing as good as you could expect him to do at this point.
And goes so, down to the Swamp.
Moral,
and that's the game that he wants.
Moral of the story ridiculous. Is... Auburn is not nationally relevant this year. Their front seven is as good as anyone.
Yeah.
That's great. You can't just be nationally relevant with just a front seven. You can't do it.
One aspect of their game is good.
There's 15 other guys that play.
Right. So he is playing admirable for a freshman. That's all. End of discussion. Let's stop talking about Auburn. And let's move on to another conversation.
Well,
and
we can circle back on the Bo Nix
in a few three years. Yeah.
In a year or two, we're going to be talking about Bo Nix. Like, oh man,
look at the strides he's made. Yeah, look at how much better he is.
Like, what are we talking about? Joe Burrow right now, people are saying is one of the Heisman front runners, one of the best, maybe the best quarterback in college football.
In the country, yeah.
Let me tell you where Joe Burrow was 3 years ago. Right. Probably not good enough to play at Ohio State or LSU. Like, it's not a knock on the kid. He's just not ready yet.
Not ready.
And the problem at Auburn is he has to be the guy.
Yeah. The benefit for Joe is he was at a school that had guys. So he didn't have to be the guy right away.
No. And then he went to LSU.
And
right?
he was ready at that point to play.
He was still. Well, I don't even know. He was still.
I mean, his first year was good,
but he still was 2-3 years removed from high school. He was not a if Joe Burrow would have been the starting quarterback at LSU as a true freshman, it wouldn't have been. I'm not saying he would have done worse than Bo Nix, but it wouldn't have been good. And it's not. Joe Burrow might be a top five pick. He might be the Heisman Trophy winner. He's playing like it, and I love him. Sure. I love him, and I always thought he could become something like that. Mm-hmm. But time out. Bo Nix is not that guy yet. Auburn is not that team yet.
Yep.
And Florida, by the way, is not that good.
No.
Florida had -4 rushing yards in the first quarter. Three fumbles on the first five drives in the first quarter. Look at it. Here were their O-line grades. There's five O-linemen, if you know football. Here was percentage grades. 43%, 45%, 46%, 47%, 58%. That is a bad day for the offensive line.
Yeah.
And here's the other problem. And not I don't want to say a problem. Florida doesn't have the skill on offense to go play a big-time team other than Freddie Swain. Freddie Swain was lights out. He had 90 of the first 100 yards for Florida. Think about that. He had a game, and people will say, "What about P. Ryan?"
Yeah, yeah.
He had 100. He had 130 yards. He had one run.
Yeah. One big run.
One run. He got hit in the hole on a poor tackle, and
you could
go back and forth. Was it a poor tackle or did he break the tackle? I don't know. Regardless, he got hit in the hole. Not an open field tackle where he made a guy miss. He got hit in the hole. Got in wrap up. Didn't tackle him. Went 88 yards. Great run. Yeah. Didn't get touched, didn't get contested after that.
The safety took a bad angle and he beat him.
Right, which I'm not going to discount that.
Yeah.
That shows that you have the speed to make that breakaway run. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about other than that run. Let's say that linebacker hit him in the hole and tackled him.
It's a 4-yard gain.
Which didn't happen, but I'm not here to play hearsay. But outside of that, he had 13 carries on 42 yards for 3.2 yards a carry. So I'm not going to say he's not a good player, but he didn't show it in that game. Freddie Swain did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On a big level.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that could be attributed to the O-line also, that he had that 3.2 yards per carry.
Well, the bottom line is we already said it. The front seven of Auburn is legit. I get it. So they held him to 3. Whatever a carry. Yeah. That's because they have a legit front seven. Okay. Outside of that is what we're talking about.
Yeah, and he had a big run. He had a big run.
He broke a big one.
But Florida's defense shut it down.
Very impressive.
Their
defense
is good. I mean,
it's really good.
No argument there.
And so everything you just heard, well, most of what you just heard is what everyone's going to talk about. Here's who I want to talk about. I don't know if he's the player of the game, but he's a weapon for Florida that no one is going to talk about is Tommy Townsend, the punter.
Mm-hmm.
Seven punts, averaged 47 yards a punt, had three inside the 20.
Wow. He might be the second best punter in America.
Yeah. Well, he's not better than Drew Chrisman at Ohio State, but he's going to rival it. But moral of the story is no one is going to talk about that.
No.
It's like, well, it's a punter. No. Who cares? Yeah. Who cares?
But look at the score in the game. Field position was a huge factor.
Exactly.
A huge factor. And Auburn had one return for -5 yards.
Yikes.
you can't ask for any more out of a punter.
Well, a punter and punt team.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah.
On games that are tight like that, the punter is huge.
Huge. And so is special teams. And
kicking game in general.
Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, Dan Mullen could not have, prior to becoming a head coach, given two shits about special teams. He didn't know anything about it. He even one time grabbed me in the hallway and was like, "Hey, at some point I'd like you to kind of maybe spend 30 minutes and teach me the special teams." And I was like, I started laughing, like, 30 minutes?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's going to be a little longer than that. I hate to break it to you.
Yeah, in 30 minutes, I can tell you this. We punt, we kick, we return.
Yeah, but what that small conversation, and what I watched after he became a head coach, told me everything you need to know. This guy gets it. He understands football. He knows they need to be dominant on special teams and knows that was a huge part of why Urban Meyer was successful. And so he bought in. And he's brilliant.
Urban's always been a special teams guy.
Yeah, and Dan Mullen is brilliant. So yeah. he dove into it at Mississippi State and became an expert eventually. Yeah. And so they're killing it in special teams. So that's a huge advantage on Florida's front for sure. I don't know about you guys, but for me, a game is 10 times more exciting when I'm putting my money on it. Sometimes I feel I have a gut feeling about a matchup, and sometimes I'm just betting on my team because they're my team. Regardless of whether you've been betting for years or you're ready to play for the first time, MyBookie is your best bet this season. If you're the kind of guy who likes to try to bet a little to win a lot, try a parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of the big favorites this week, which you did this weekend, mm-hmm. Parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag because no one gives you more ways to win. Between football season, the MLB playoffs, and the start of the NBA and NHL seasons, it's time to get off the sidelines and get into action. If you really want to support your team this season, don't just sit on the sidelines. Get in the game with mybookie.ag. And if you join right now, MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code MENACE, MENACE, to activate the offer. That's promo code MENACE to double your cash. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. And I know we talked about it, and you did it this weekend, right?
I just did it, yeah. Over last week, I signed up, put $100 in there.
What are you up to? Where are you at?
I'm at, well, with that $100, I won like about $220, something like that. Yeah. And I did a parlay.
I was saying, did like you do any saying. NFL games?
Yeah.
So so that's still in process.
Yeah.
But did you double your money?
I did.
Oh, look at you.
100%.
So you took advantage. So I would advise everyone to, if you like throwing some money on some games, go to mybookie.ag, double your money, and then just bet with the free money, right? And start with that.
The free stuff.
Worst case scenario, you're even if you lose.
Like they say, playing with house money.
Playing with house money. So check it out when you get a chance. Mybookie.ag. All right, now I have a confession to make, and you can take it for what it's worth. Peepaw's picks last week. Apparently, I don't know how to read.
You were struggling.
Yeah, you were struggling last week.
But I'll tell you two things. One, he's going to change how he sends me this stuff because it's impossible to read. It's impossible to even say who the away team is as I read it.
He hit me up immediately after listening to the show.
Yeah, well, yeah. Peepaw's got a new format coming. Otherwise, he's going to be fired, and we're going to look for some attractive female to do it or something because he's killing me. But anyways, so Peepaw went 6-3. Unfortunately, I misread two of his picks, and so he went 4-5.
4-5
on the show.
Yeah. On the show, yeah.
He went. But I have his picks that he sent me last week. He went 6-3.
Yeah.
Apparently, I just read all the favorites. I thought I read what he picked, but he picked Cincinnati and Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
And they won. So Peepaw got it.
He was not happy after listening. He was like, that's one of my picks.
So the good thing is, because of his format sucked, if any of you lost money on those two games, just I'll give you his email.
His direct email and phone number.
If you just contact me, I will give you his direct email. You can contact him and tell him why he needs to pay you what you lost and why he needs to clean up his damn format, because it's not okay. But I hate to even do this, but I'm going to do it.
You got to do it.
I want to briefly
talk about the rankings. And before you read to me the new AP rankings, no, you know what? Go ahead. Read me the top six teams.
Six?
Yeah.
Okay. So you got Bama 1, Clemson 2, Ohio State and Georgia 3, because they're tied.
It's not possible, but okay.
They have the same number of points. And then LSU 5, Oklahoma 6.
Okay. So
Florida 7.
Why I wanted to bring that up. Oh, Florida 7. That's Florida relevant. 7. That's relevant. Yeah. That's relevant now. So why I wanted to bring that up is because, like I said, I've been watching football again religiously for the first time in a year. I just watched games on Saturdays like most fans do last year. Kind of a little bitter. But anyways, I mean, just that's why
hey,
I didn't.
Hey, let's be real.
I mean, just saying, that's not why. That's why I didn't like really look at it, like what's going on, whatever. And I really watched more national football than I ever have in my 15-year career. But watched a lot of football, pay attention to a lot of analytics, a lot of stats. And let me give you the best graded teams in the country, top seven. Ohio State 1, Georgia 2, Alabama 3, LSU 4, Penn State 5, Penn State 5, by the way,
yeah.
Oklahoma 6, Wisconsin 7.
Ooh.
Yeah, I was wondering when Penn State was gonna be mentioned in that because they look amazing.
Yeah. Penn State is the, so I said it last week, Iowa was the most, the least talked about team that was undefeated. And I think we all knew why they weren't.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess Penn State hasn't been talked about as much because Trace McSorley's gone and Saquon's been gone for a while. Yep. Like, who is Penn State have? I get it.
Yeah.
But Penn State looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
They are not struggling.
Offense, defense, across the board. Wisconsin. So that's three Big Ten teams, three SEC teams.
And Oklahoma.
And Oklahoma. Yeah, and Oklahoma. Right?
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah. And I mean, outside of the one game against Pitt that Penn State kind of struggled, you know, 1-7, they've been blowing everybody out.
They always do that, though.
Which is fine. The two teams that were not mentioned, Florida and Clemson. So Clemson right now is graded out, both Pro Football Focus and myself, 13th in the country behind. And Oregon's ahead of them. Utah's ahead of them. Iowa is still ahead of them. I mean, matter of fact, like Washington at 4-2 is ahead of them. Which, again, there's so many factors here. But it's all about, like, graded performance in every facet of the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every performance. Like, you look at the best offenses in the country. The top four are Georgia 1, Oklahoma 2, Alabama 3, LSU 4, Ohio State 6, Wisconsin 10, Clemson 16. So you could look at all. How about defenses? The number one defense grade-wise in the country is Ohio State 1, Penn State 2, Alabama 3. How about this one? Michigan 4, Georgia 6, Oregon 7, Michigan State is 8 even after that game. Auburn actually is tied for 8 even after the Florida debacle, and Wisconsin 10. But you go through this stuff. And so what I always look at is that's always about like who you play, whatever. I want to know who are the teams in the country that tackle really well. And you know who the best tackling team in the country is? Ohio State.
They miss like what, two tackles a game, maybe.
Well, on average, I think it's like three or four, which is unheard of. But they're the best tackling defense in the country. And
that's that cheek to cheek, man.
It's Ohio State 1, Alabama 2.
Yeah,
and it's one of those like, okay, who'd they play? Whatever, it doesn't matter.
No,
who's tackling the best? Ohio State. Who's right behind, nipping at their heels, and like debatable who's first? Mm-hmm. Alabama. Yeah. Oh, yep, that makes sense.
All right.
Those probably are the two best teams in the country.
Right. I would say, and I don't know this stat off the top of my head, so I don't know, but I would probably venture and guess that if you went back and looked at teams that made the playoff or teams that were in it, they always tackle well. I mean, when you look at Ohio State that loses a game to Purdue or whatever, they didn't tackle well. That's why they didn't win that game. And so the best tackling teams in the country oftentimes are the best teams in the country.
Always. Yeah. And that's why I have harped on it so much on both of our shows, because tackling has been the greatest indicator of defensive success. And Chris Ash is the one that brought it to me, and Greg Schiano even took it to another level doing like multi-year, 10, 15-year studies, and the team that tackles the best usually ends up right in the mix.
Yeah,
and
somewhere.
I mean, you look at tackling, like you're talking about like the national relevant teams. Ohio State and Alabama are the only two in the top 25 that anyone in the country is talking about right now on a national landscape. So that tells me Ohio State and Alabama are probably going to play for it all.
Yeah. Well, they're at least going to be in the conversation or in the playoff.
Well, the reality is they might play for it all. It might be the semi.
Yeah.
But I've lived that life.
Yeah. Similar to another year.
I've been there before where the national championship game happened was to be the round before the national championship game.
You did that at Florida when you played Alabama in the SEC championship.
Oh, absolutely.
That was the national championship, honestly.
Obviously, he did it at Ohio State when he played Alabama in the semifinals and then went on and beat Oregon, which is what I think he's talking about.
No, I know, but I'm saying he did it at Florida.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was definitely talking about Ohio State, but I got you.
I know, but I got you. There was no playoff then, so I'm saying that was the actual national championship before they beat Ohio State 41-14.
It was 100% the national. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. And as it was the next year when Alabama beat Florida.
Exactly.
Beat us. And then went on and won the national championship.
Yes.
Exactly.
Here's another stat for you that I think is crazy. Ohio State, and granted, I think Ohio State's the best team in the country right now on film, playing the best in the country.
Me too.
They are, I just mentioned it, they are the number one defense grade-wise. Mm-hmm. They are the number one tackling defense grade-wise. Mm-hmm. They are the number one pass rush defense grade-wise.
This is definitely the best defense of Ohio State that I've seen in a long time.
And so then I look at rushing offense, I look at all of that, but nowadays, the college football, especially at the highest level, is becoming more and more like the NFL. And everything we just talked about is so relevant in the conversation for NFL football and also upper echelon college football. The other thing that's not talked about enough, and don't get me wrong, running the football is how you win on offense, but you have to be able to throw it efficiently. Mm-hmm. You don't have to put up 600 yards a game and be Mike Leach and just throw it all over the place, but you have to throw it efficiently. And that's why I look at passing offensive grades, not stats, not who's leading the country in pass offense. I don't care. They never win the national championship. Here's who is the top four teams in the country. How about the top five teams in the country throwing the ball grade-wise, not statistically? Here you go. You ready for it?
Yep.
Georgia 1, Oklahoma 2, mm-hmm. LSU tied for 2, yep. Ohio State 4, Alabama 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do we need to keep going?
But probably the best passing offense on paper is probably, what, Texas Tech or something?
Well, it doesn't matter.
No. I know. That's what I'm saying.
But my point is, at some point, if you're going to go into a Super Bowl, right, which is what it was in 2014 in the Sugar Bowl, Ohio State, Alabama. I mean, look at the rosters. Mm-hmm. Those rosters, I mean, that's a Super Bowl. You're going to run the ball. You're going to try to run the ball. You're going to do things to run the ball. And if you have a great run game, it's going to be a deciding factor. But at some point, you're going to have to throw it. Third down, red zone, I mean, play action. You're going to have to throw it. And that was the difference. Alabama couldn't throw the ball against Ohio State. We threw the ball against Alabama. Ezekiel Elliott also went off,
But the pass opens up the run. Yeah,
contributing factor.
If you can do the pass, if you can pass effectively, then that opens up the run. Obviously.
I think there's five teams in this race right now, and Clemson will be in it because they play no one. So these other five teams are racing for the other three spots, and Clemson won't win the national championship. Ultimately, it's Georgia, Oklahoma, LSU, Ohio State, Alabama. Done. Stop talking about everyone else.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean,
what about Penn State?
Oh, I love Penn State. I think Penn State is
that's going to be a tough game in November.
It's a quality win for Ohio State.
There you go.
They're a New York Six.
And guess what? Penn State will go play someone in a bowl game that
the ESPNs of the world will say that they are not going to beat, yep. and they'll beat them.
Yeah.
Because they're a really good football
team. They'll go play Florida or something.
They would just mop the floor of Florida.
That's what I was going to bring up is when you look at the rankings and the team that has not been mentioned ever in all of this stuff that you're talking about, the grades and all that, is Clemson, which mm-hmm. is alarming because
they're going to
get there. They're going to get there. And, I mean, the thing is Dabo's been good. So, who knows? They might get it all fixed, but right now they don't look like a team that even can compete on this level.
I'm gonna tell you right now, I'm calling it right here. They're gonna lose to someone, and people are gonna go, "What?" Because they are not playing. Should have been
North Carolina.
It should have been North Carolina, but that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Virginia,
right? There's gonna be something come along and be like, "What?"
Yeah.
No, I'm telling you now, they're gonna lose a game. It's coming, and if they don't, it's coming in a big way in January
in the semifinals.
Yeah,
yeah.
But it's going to be interesting to see it all shake out as we come down the meat of the schedule here in the middle of the season. And finally, we're getting these weekends. This is a big weekend coming up. Really excited to preview it, talk about the matchups, talk about what the impact of the landscape of college football will be the result of this weekend. I mean, there's some huge games, starting with the Red River Showdown, Texas and Oklahoma in the Cotton Bowl, which is going to be a huge game. Then there's a ton of huge games. I mean, Alabama A&M, finally Alabama will play someone, even though A&M is completely overinflated as far as rankings are concerned. And the real question is, speaking of Willie Taggart, could the Seminoles knock off Florida State or knock off Clemson? Could the Seminoles do it at Clemson? Probably not. We know that. But the way they played North Carolina, you never know. And there's a litany of other great games this weekend. I mean, there's Iowa-Penn State should be a good game. Florida-LSU. Florida at LSU is the huge night game at 8 o'clock. And then USC-Notre Dame should be a decent game. So some big perennial powers, some big-time teams are playing. Chance for some upsets now and try to clarify this landscape that is college football. But I just want to thank you for tuning in. Thank you for joining us. A little bit shorter show this week, but certainly the preview show will be a little bit longer. And moving forward, have a lot more content because of the scheduling. So again, as I mentioned, every show, if you're interested in sponsorship or advertising, reach out at sponsorship@menacetosociety.com or menacetosocietypodcast.com. And if you're interested in the written platform, we've had probably 150 submissions already and looking for more. We're trying to find the right fit, the right people that kind of fit our brand. So reach out to me, Zach, Z-A-C-H, at menacetosocietypodcast.com. And just thanks for listening. Hope you were educated. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope it was entertaining. And if it wasn't, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
That's why I don't read the newspaper, because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage.
Or do you do what everybody else in the media does, just create some shit and throw it on the wall and see what sticks, which is what I see happening everywhere.
Where are we at in society today? I'm a man. I'm 40.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my ass.